Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And today, we have a board game that we would like to talk about to your ears.
As we do.
As we are one to do. So, Matt, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about Everdell, designed by James A. Wilson and published in 2018 by Starling Games. And I did not realize this game came out in 2018.
Neither did I. I feel like there was a lot of hype surrounding this game, at least in our local community and the communities we run with, just recently. Like, maybe there was a new print run, perhaps.
And maybe.
Perhaps it was out of stock. Lots of places. I'm not exactly sure why it felt like this was a newer game, like this year and last year, but yeah, it came out in 2018. What else do you have to say about Everdell?
That's it.
Okay. All right. So Everdell, did you mention any awards? Because I feel like it
was nominated for a lot, but it didn't win anything.
Okay. Nominated for a lot. Honestly, I think it deserves to win something because this is a pretty good game. Maybe there was just stiff competition.
Yeah.
So Everdell. So just to give a short description on what Everdell is about, in Everdell, players place workers to gain resources in order to build constructions and recruit critters to their forest towns. At the end of the game's four seasons, the player whose town earns the most points from critters, constructions, events, and bonuses wins. So that was a very short description on what this game is about. It's much more complicated than that, but as far as worker placement games go, it is kind of simple. So, again, the goal of the game is to score the most points from your town. Each player is building their own town by playing cards into their town that have critters or constructions in them. Everyone's town has a limit of 15 cards. Some cards will be able to circumvent that number in specific ways, but we'll get into that later, potentially. But you are building a town out of up to 15 cards. You draw a hand of cards at the start of the game, and there is a meadow of 8 cards, a trade row of sorts, that is present in the game, and whenever a card is acquired or played from there, it is immediately replaced, and cards come in a number of varieties. So let's talk a little bit more about gameplay, let's get into more specifics, and then we're going to talk about strategy, and then later on in the episode, we will talk about the game design.
Yes.
Starting with how to play. So this is a worker placement game, but worker placement isn't the only action a player can take. There will be a starting player, and turns are taken in a clockwise order from the starting player until the game ends. Starting player never changes or anything. The way that the worker placement or the actions in the game work is on your turn, you take one of three actions. You can either place a worker, and whenever you place a worker, you'll usually gain some amount of resources or cards from depending on where you placed your worker. The second action is you can play a card, which you must pay the resource cost on the card that you're attempting to play, and then add it to your village, or follow any other instructions if it says otherwise. You can play cards from your hand, which you draw a hand of cards at the start of the game, and you will draw more cards throughout the game. Or you can play cards from the meadow. The meadow is sort of like the shared pool, it's a trade row of sorts where you can play cards from. And every time you play a card from the meadow, it's immediately replaced from a card with a card from the deck. So that's the second action, play a card. Certain cards, which are the critter cards, can be played for free if you already have specific structures or constructions, rather, in your town already. So, for example, if you have a farm in your town, then you can place the mom or the dad critter for free. And that's, in a way, expends this option from the farm that you have in your town. So that's the second action, play a card. The third action is prepare for the season. I believe that's what it's called. Yes, prepare for the next season. So the game takes place over four seasons. You start technically in winter. I'm doing air quotes as I say these. And you end at the end of fall. The game ends at the end of fall. And the seasons are just sort of a device used to explain when you retrieve your workers from the board and gain special bonuses when doing so. So when you go from winter into spring, that is the first time you prepare for the next season, you acquire an additional worker. You start with two workers, so you gain a third worker. When you prepare for spring, you also activate certain effects of constructions and critters that are in your town in the beginning of spring. Then when you prepare for summer, you get a fourth worker, plus you get to draw two cards from the meadow to add to your hand. And when you prepare for fall, which is the final season, you get two workers. And then again, you get to collect certain resources and activate certain abilities from cards that are in your village. Let's see, where should we go from there?
So you mentioned that you get new workers every season.
Yep.
The actions you spend your workers on are kind of, they're separated into a few different categories. There's the path, the trail, which is, they all kind of give you kind of just some of the basic resources, which include wood, resin, pebbles, and berries. Sometimes they also give you cards. Normally, if it says to draw cards, you take the cards from the top of the deck, but sometimes some spaces will say to, like, take cards from the meadow, in which you take cards from the meadow, which is that center trade row, and then you replace them.
Yes, the path that you were talking about, by the way, is called the basic locations.
Yes, and these they can also give you points. I believe there's at least one basic location that gives you 1 point, mm-hmm. just as sort of a bonus. Then there are also spaces for the forest, which
they're called forest locations.
The forest locations are like these cards that you shuffle and randomize, and they're pretty much random bonus actions you can take with your workers every game.
Yeah, and they generally give you more resources than the basic locations.
Yes.
You deal, I believe, 3 of them in a 2-player game to spaces on the board, and 4 of them get dealt in a 3-4-player game. In a 3-player game or fewer, you can only use 1 of the spaces that workers can be placed on in each of these actions. And in a 4-player game, you can use 2 spaces on each of these forest locations. By the way, it should be mentioned, the forest locations and half of the basic locations have a limit of 1 worker capacity. So if there's a worker already placed on some of these locations, like, for example, on the basic locations, there's one that gives 3 sticks. You can only have 1 worker there. So if there's already a worker there, that action can't be taken by another worker. However, and that's signified by the location where you place your worker being a completed circle. However, there are other spaces in the basic locations and in a couple other places on the board where the circle is not completely finished and it's slightly larger. And at these spaces, any number of workers can be placed there.
Yes. So
those other spaces being the Haven, which lets you discard cards for resources, and the Journey, which has 3 locations that can only have 1 worker and 1 location that can have any number. The Journey, by the way, gives you bonus points at the end of the game, and it can only be used in the 4th season.
Yes. So we mentioned that there are 4 different types of resources. These mm-hmm. are used to actually play the cards that you get. Like we said before, you can play cards either from your hand or the meadow. Each mm-hmm. player has a maximum hand size of 8 cards, by the way. If you draw more than 8, then you discard down to 8.
Mm-hmm.
The all cards cost some amount of resources. Usually, constructions will cost wood, resin, or pebbles in some combination.
Right.
And the critters will cost berries. And then, of course, mm-hmm. as we said before, some constructions let you build specific critters for free.
Yes.
Now, there are, I believe, 4 different types of cards.
There are 5 suits of cards, technically.
Yes, 5 suits, go over them. Sort of 5 effect types.
Yes, so those suits are Tan Traveler, Green Production, Red Destination, Blue Governance, or Purple Prosperity, and they all have a symbol connected with them. So the tan cards have like a bindle stick, green cards have a leaf, red cards have a paw print, blue cards have a scroll, and purple cards have a flower.
Yes. So the way these work is travelers, is it? The bindles?
Yeah,
the tan ones.
The bindle sticks, the tan ones, yeah.
Those
tan travelers.
Those give you an effect when you play the card, and otherwise they just give you whatever points are listed. It should be noted every card has a point value.
Mm-hmm.
The governance cards, the blue ones with a scroll, those have sort of a triggered ability, a bonus that happens when you do something else, like when you play a critter.
Mm-hmm.
They
will also occasionally allow you to perform like a construction effect, or allow you to acquire a card or build a card in your city for a reduced cost.
Yeah, like the crane, which is you discard it from play to build something for cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
The green production cards, Those give you a resource or bonus when you play them, listed on the card with like a little green effect symbol next to it. And then at the start of spring and fall, you also get that ability when you take your workers back.
Yeah, so if you were to build a farm in the first season of the game, which is technically winter, you get a berry the instant that you build it, because that's what farms do, they give you a berry. And then when you prepare for the next season, for spring, you get a berry. And when you prepare for a next season during fall, if you still have that farm around, you get a berry.
Right. You do not take this for summer.
There are, yeah, summer, instead of gaining resources or triggering your green production card effects that are in your village, instead of doing that, you draw two cards from the meadow. By the way, whenever you draw multiple cards from the meadow, you draw them both before replacing either of them.
Yes.
Let's see. I want to mention that it's possible to remove cards from your village after they've been placed there from certain other card effects, but they're pretty rare. So usually, unless the card can get rid of itself, like in the case of the crane, then it's difficult to remove cards from your town. And when you play a card in your town, you should expect to keep it there for a while.
Yes.
Or for the rest of the game.
Now,
but it's not always guaranteed.
Now, red destinations, they have the paw print symbol, which matches the symbol of an action space, because every destination card grants you another action you can take with your workers.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these will have a little open sign on it, which means that other players can take this action as well. But whenever another player does so, you get a point.
Yes.
And then finally, the purple cards, the prosperity cards, I think you said.
Yes.
Those give you extra points for doing different things.
Yeah. Sometimes they'll give you bonus points based on some count of other cards in your town. Sometimes they'll give you a bonus point if you have a specific other card in your town. Like in the case of the mom, you get bonus points if you also have a dad in your town. Are they mom and dad or are they
husband
and
wife?
I actually don't know. Husband and wife. Okay.
Yes.
Husband and wife. Yes. If you have a husband in your, or a wife, you get bonus points if you also have a husband in your town.
Yes.
Yeah. So then, those are the basics of the cards. Oh, you have anything else to add?
I was just going to say there's one more major mechanic we haven't talked about.
Would that be the events?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah. So the suits of the cards not only give the cards effect give you an inclination of how the card effect will work and occur, but they also count for these things called basic events. Where if you have acquired 3, or in the case of green production, 4 of one suit of card in your village, then you can place a worker on one of the basic events, which are located above the basic actions on the game board, the basic locations on the game board. And they will each give you 3 points at the end of the game, 3 bonus points. But they are first come, first serve. So if you and another player have both acquired 4 green production cards in your village, only the first player to acquire the green production basic event gets those bonus points. And then the basic events act similarly to another type of scoring bonus point mechanic in this game called the special events. So on the branches of this tree, by the way, have we talked about the tree yet?
I don't think we have. There's a giant tree.
Yeah, there's a giant cardboard tree component, sort of like a cardboard standee that you assemble before you play the game. At the base of the tree, there's a slot between 2 like trunk pieces for you to keep the deck of cards that you draw from for this game. And then there's 2 levels of branches. The topmost level of branches has some explainer text and symbols for each of the seasons. And it's also where you keep the workers that you are going to obtain throughout the seasons. On the topmost branch. And then on the bottom branch, which is much larger, there's enough room to keep 4 special event cards. And a special event card will have 2 parts to it. It'll have a requirement, which lists 2 specific cards that you have to have in your village in order to acquire the special event. When you have those 2 cards, you can place your worker on the event card to acquire it. And once you acquire a special event card, it will usually have an effect that you have to perform immediately. And that effect will end up earning you usually up to 6 bonus points at the end of the game, depending on how much you can pay into it. So there's effect cards that say, like, when you acquire it, pay any number of, or pay up to 3 sticks. And for each stick you pay, you get 2 bonus points at the end of the game. Or when you acquire it, discard 3 critters under this card. You get 2 bonus points for each critter discarded this way. There's a couple events that don't have like a payment, but they will allow you to say like return your workers or remove a 1 or 2 cards from your village, and they will give you probably fewer than 6 bonus points when the cost is something that's actually beneficial to you. Usually they'll give you like 2 to 4 bonus points.
Yeah.
And again, you acquire those when you have 2 specific required cards, depending on the event. Like one might be to have the university and the teacher in your school. These cards, by the way, are never a pair of cards that like allow you to play one of the other cards for free. And also, they're not always a construction and a critter. Sometimes they're 2 constructions, sometimes they're 2 critters, and sometimes they're 1 of each. So yeah, when you have those requirements, you can place a worker on the special event card to acquire it and perform its action to get bonus points at the end of the game. Okay, so that's how to play. So let's get a little bit into the strategy of this game.
Yes.
I think the first thing and the most important thing to point out is that this is a worker placement game, but your actions aren't limited to the number of workers you have. You only start with 2 workers in the first season of the game, which doesn't sound like a lot when you consider what the game is asking you to do. But you can take more than 2 actions in the first season if you use your workers and your resources wisely. So, yeah. For example, you can play a worker to obtain some sticks. You can play a worker to obtain some resin. Then you can use those sticks and resin to build some constructions, which will give you resources back. Maybe they give you more sticks, or maybe they give you some berries. You can then use those berries to play critters into your town, and then maybe those critters give you resources. Or potentially you play a construction that allows you to play a critter for free. And each of these actions is another action you've taken. So even though you only have 2 workers in your first season, you could potentially take 5, 6 actions before you have to progress to the next season. And doing this is important for keeping up with the tempo of your other players, of your opponents.
Yes. Yeah. This is an engine building game based around worker efficiency, to where you want to be able to do as much as you can every season, which means being as self-sustaining as possible without using your workers.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to clarify something real quick. Being as efficient as possible, or taking, it's not necessarily about taking as many turns as possible in each season, because I'll remind the listeners that there's a limit to 15 cards in your town, and there's ways to be a little more flexible about that. But at the end of the game, you can't play more than 15 cards in your town. Once you play the 15th card, unless you have some other effect amongst those cards to remove something from your town, that's it. And if you are too efficient, or you take too many bonus actions in between the seasons, you might get all the way to the 4th season, or you might fill up your town by the end of the 3rd season. You might have played all 15 cards in your town by the end of the 3rd season. And you might not necessarily want to do that, depending on what your plan is and how many points you're getting from all the cards you've played. If you get into the final season, you know, you can just use all of your workers to draw cards and then spend them on the journey spaces, where you just discard cards to get bonus points for the end of the game. And that's fine. But the 4th season is the season where you have the most workers. So, you know, it's the season where you have the most flexibility with the things you can do. So I think you definitely want to take advantage of especially the first 2 seasons, and taking a bunch of bonus actions during those seasons, so that by the time you get your 4th, 5th, and 6th workers, you have a lot of actions and resources that you can work with.
Yeah.
But you still have to be careful not to fill up your town too quickly.
Yeah. I want to mention that, so on average, every card you play is going to be about 1.5 points. And so, like, eking out the point advantage over the opponents is pretty important. And a big part of that is the events. Mm-hmm. But the events all require a worker to claim. Which means that, I mean, for every event you're taking, you're not taking resources, but also for every resource you're taking, you're not taking events. And so one thing I would recommend is trying to build towards a few events at a time. What that means is, like, getting maybe 2 critters that are on 2 different cards, 2 different special events, or, like, getting, you know, a few different symbols in your town for the first season, or if you are like hyper specializing, so like if you start the second season with three green symbols already, then just going for the event early because they're first come first serve. Mm-hmm. I think part of why taking extra actions with your cards and resources is important is because that way you have workers to spend on getting points.
Yes. So yeah, you want to build that engine quickly and then utilize that engine to not have to rely so hard on your workers getting the resources. You want your engine to get the resources for you so that your workers can be spent getting bonus points. And the bonus points are important to illustrate that. Like you said, every building in this game probably gives you on average 1.5 points. There's a couple rare buildings that could give you 4 points, plus the bonus points. But looking at just the basic point cost you get from any average building, just giving the points that it gives, yeah, it's about a point and a half. At times 15, that comes to 22.5 points. And the games that we have played, that I have played personally, the winner of the game has in the ballpark of 60 points. So that's not accounting. So if you're only getting a point and a half on average from each of your 15 buildings, then that still leaves about 37, 38 points that you haven't earned yet. So those 30 something points, definitely a good chunk of them come from the events and the special events, the basic events and the special events.
Yes.
The other place that they can come from and that they usually will come from is from the build around cards that are in this game. So before I mention build around cards, I want to explain that not only do the cards come in 4 different suits, but they also come in 4 different varieties of critter or construction. Those are common critter, unique critter, common construction, and unique construction. And the difference between those two mechanically, like intrinsically, is that you can have any number of copies of a common critter or construction in your town, but you can only have one copy of any given unique critter or construction in your town. You can't have two of a kind when it comes to those. And then there are cards in this game, the purple prosperity cards, that will give you a bonus point for every card of one of those types in your village at the end of the game. So you might get, there's like a critter that gives you a point for every common critter. I think it's like the king or something. Or maybe the king gives you a point for every unique critter. There's the school gives you a point for every common construction in your town. So these build around cards that sort of ask you to have, or no, the school gives you a point for every common critter. But there's, yeah, buildings that give you points for common critters, unique critters, etc. So these build around cards, they give you a lot of bonus points, you know, potentially up to 15 bonus points if you can really specialize your town, but it's kind of hard to do that. But they can at least give you 6, which is the same as in a basic event, pretty easily, as long as you are focused on it. So having these build around cards for points is very important, and it is especially helpful when the build around cards for points synergize with the engine that you've built.
Yeah, I got the king on our last game, which gives you an extra point for each event you've completed and 2 points for every special event. So it kind of rewarded me for already playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to point out that one particular. But yeah, like if your engine is based around getting a lot of critters, then the one for common critters is really good.
Yeah. The shopkeeper is the one that gives you a berry every time you play a critter card.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you have the shopkeeper, which gives you a berry every time you play a critter, and critters take berries to be played, then that allows you to play more critters than your opponents do. So that synergizes really well with the payoff card that gives you bonus points for having a lot of critters in your town.
I want to mention that it feels like card draw is pretty important in this game, mainly because the set collection aspect is so prominent between like synergetic cards, cards that are free if you have other cards in play, and the special events which require actual set collection. And so like card draw effects are really useful because it lets you kind of sift through the deck and get some consistency. You can already think of your hand as being 8 plus whatever is in your physical hands, because like the meta is playable, and you do compete over that with other players, but like being able to dig further than other players means you might be able to get a synergy before they do.
Mm-hmm.
Two big ways this happens, other than on the board, there is a construction, I believe, is a trading post that draws two cards as a green symbol. So it's draw two cards when you play it, and then draw two when at the start of spring and fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the Wanderer, which is a critter that does not take up space in your town, and it draws three cards when you play it.
Right. There's also the Teacher that lets you draw two cards, keep one, and give the other to an opponent. That is a green card, so it occurs when you play it, and at the start of spring and fall.
Oh, and then there's
also the Post Office, yes, which allows you to, when you place a worker there, it unlocks a place. It's an open location, too, so your opponents can use this. But when you place a worker there, you have to give two cards to another player. Then you may discard any number of cards from your hand. Then you draw up to your maximum hand size, which is 8. So you can potentially dig for 8 cards using mm-hmm. this effect, which is a pretty powerful effect.
It should if also
you're looking
be,
for a very specific card.
It should also be worth noted that at the final round, in autumn, I mean, in fall, mm-hmm. you gain the ability to access a area in the bottom left that lets you discard cards for points. Three of the spaces are first come, first serve. They're those closed circle spaces. And the highest point value one is 5, meaning you discard 5 cards to get 5 points. Then 4 points for 4 cards, then 3 for 3. And then any number of players can take 2 for 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's an open space. But so that means that even if you're drawing a lot of cards and you're not really playing all of them, you can still get points from those. And 5 right. points is roughly the same as a special event.
Right. And the 2-1, again, can have any number of workers. You can even put multiple of your own workers there. So you can end up getting 4 to 6 points from that space if you have the workers and the cards in your hand at the end of the game.
Yeah. I also,
which honestly isn't a terrible use of your workers at the end of the game if you've accidentally filled up your town a little too quickly.
Yeah. I also want to mention one specific location, which is the university, which is one of the only cards that can remove other cards from your town.
It is a destination, so you place a worker there to take that effect,
yeah.
correct? And then when you do take that effect, you remove a card from your town, and you gain its resources back, plus an extra resource and a point.
Reminds me of that one card from Res Arcana.
Yeah, it's a pretty... There's a couple parallels we could draw when we get into design to Res Arcana, which came out a year after this game,
yeah.
as we've learned.
But also, the university is not an open space, meaning you can take your time with it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to like worry about other people stealing the space from you once you play the
right.
card.
Yeah, university, I think, is a pretty useful construction. There's one construction called Ruin, which destroys a town, or it destroys a construction in your town and replaces it with a construction that's worth 0 points. But when you do that, you gain resources equal to the construction's cost, which I think is also kind of useful, at least if there's a construction that you've gained a benefit from already and is no longer that useful to you, or, you know, you see some other construction you'd rather have in your town, but you don't have the workers to get the resources. I think maybe the best way of thinking about it is it's a way to get resources without using a worker, so that worker can be spent doing something else like getting points.
Yeah.
Or getting other kinds of resources.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention that, so you activate your green production structures every time you go into spring and then fall. But when you go into summer, you don't worry about what's in your town. You just get your workers, and then you draw 2 cards from the meadow. So when there comes to be a race, usually this happens around this time anyways. People have had some time to get resources, and they've built a number of constructions and critters in their town that they're looking at these events. And sometimes one of the required cards for those events, whether it be because of its suit or because of its specific card name, can be in the meadow around that time. So if you haven't spent all of your workers, I think it's still worthwhile to spend all those workers. You're kind of leaving a lot of actions and resources on the table if you don't. But if you have spent all your workers and you could extend the spring season before going into fall by taking a bunch of bonus actions, I think if you're competing over something that's in the meadow, it's better to advance to summer much sooner, as soon as possible, because drawing it from the meadow takes it away from other people's you know, opportunities to play. So like if everyone, if there's two or three players that need like a third card with a scroll on it, and there's one of those in the meadow, it's best to just like progress to the summer so that you can draw it and take it away.
Yeah. In this case, since you're not missing out on gaining resources from the green production cards, there isn't much of a cost to moving from spring to summer. Other than just your workers.
Yeah.
So you think of it more of like one giant phase. And hate drafting is pretty strong. And there's not a huge opportunity cost since you can still play what's in the meadow.
Mm-hmm.
That like, it's honestly pretty efficient to hate draft something other people need. Since you can like discard it, or you can just not play it, or maybe you can use it on your own.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of not playing, one strategy I want to bring up is that, again, your town has a limited number of spaces to it. You can only have 15 cards. And sometimes, pretty much every time, you have the opportunity to play a card for free because you already have a construction in your town, the prerequisite construction. It's important to just think for a moment about whether that card is worth one of the 15 slots in your village. So even though I could play a husband, I keep changing what it's called. Even though I could play a husband off of my farm, you know, maybe I don't have a wife, so I wouldn't really be able to get its benefit. Or, you know, maybe I do have a wife, but maybe I don't really want to have a husband and wife in my town. Maybe I'd rather play something else or have a different strategy in mind. Maybe my build around doesn't have anything to do with villagers, so I don't want so many villagers. So these are just things that you should consider before you play a card for free. You can fall into a trap if you just focus too hard on what you can do for free and what bonus actions you can be taking. You might end up with a subpar town by the end of the game because you filled it up with cards that don't really matter in the end.
Right. Always look over to that giant tree and look at what your objectives are.
Yeah, look at your objectives. Also just consider like how many points am I actually getting by playing this in the town. Like, sure, I could play the postal pigeon for free because I have the post office, but the postal pigeon is worth 0 points at the end of the game. So am I getting anything that valuable from its effect that I need to play it? Is it an objective as one of the, you know, special events? Do I need any cards of its suit, or should I really just not play the postal pigeon for free because I'd rather have something else in my town that's actually worth points, especially considering whatever strategy I'm going for or whatever events I'm going for?
Yeah, I will say something we completely forgot to mention during the rules is that every construction can only be used once to build a free critter.
Yes.
There's these little wooden tokens you put Not wooden, they look wooden. These little tokens you put on the construction to show that they've been used to make a free critter. And the farm can make a husband or a wife, but I don't believe it can make both for free.
It cannot.
Yeah. But
and the husband costs more berries, by the way. So yeah, if you do have one of them played for free, you'd rather have the husband.
Because husband also gives you resources.
Yeah.
Whereas wife is just points. But it is a pretty good amount of points. I do recommend building a husband and wife if you can.
Yeah, that was, yeah, the postal pigeons may be a better example when it comes to free things, because it's actually worth 0 points. The husband and wife are probably good in almost any town, because they give you a ton of points.
Yeah, I think husband's 1, wife is 2, and then together it gives you an extra 3?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's about it for strategy for me.
Think carefully, go for events. I think the last thing I want to say is that I mentioned the build around cards, but It's hard to specialize your town around just one type of card. You know, even though you have a school, and that means you're trying to have a lot of common critters, it's hard to have a town that's entirely common critters. Like, it's hard to make that engine work. You kind of need to have constructions and critters in some combination in your town. So the last thing I would say is, because of that, having multiple payoff cards is pretty valuable in this game.
Yes.
The times that I've seen people win, it's because they had more than one payoff card that they were getting a bunch of bonus points from. The first game I played, I think the person who won had like 3 payoff cards that they were gaining at least 5 or 6 points from each.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a quick break to go over some plugs before we get into strategy.
Okay.
All right, it's time for Board Game Bros plug. So if you'd like, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast and hit us up there with comments and suggestions. We are extremely open to trying out any games that you would like us to try out, so please hit us up there with those suggestions. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, to find all of our episodes cataloged and tagged. You can use our search bar function to find any specific episode that you're looking for our thoughts on. There's also a form that you can fill out on that website to email us with any suggestions if you'd like to contact us through that channel. And on our website, you can also find a link to our TeePublic store. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast to get merch with our cool logo on it. So that does it for Board Game Bros plugs. So let's hear some Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 p.m. Central Time. I stream a lot of roguelites, a lot of Binding of Isaac recently. I've been doing some speedruns, learning some new speedruns, routing some new speedruns, playing some fighting games like the new Guilty Gear. So if any of that sounds cool, check that out. It's always chill, always analytical, and always a good time. You can also find a Discord server through there where you can talk to fans of us and our work. And you can follow my other podcast, NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web, where me and my friend Galen talk about interesting media from the information age, if you will. This month is July, and so we're covering the works of the trio The Lonely Island, including an episode on the movie Hot Rod that just released. So if you're interested in movies or TV or games or music or what have you, check that out. That's NetSurfer Pro, with Net and Surfer being one word.
Yes. Check out NetSurfer Pro. And if you'd like, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Craig Designs for my personal thoughts and for the feed where I like funny tweets.
Oh yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming.
All right,
I am gaming.
That does it for plugs. Let's get into our strategy discussion.
All right, so oh, this chart,
did I say strategy? I meant design.
Yeah.
Whoops. All right, let's get into our design discussion. Okay.
All right, so this tree. I feel like we have to start with the tree.
I feel like we have to start with the tree too. It's a very, it's large. It's really big.
Yes.
Sort of a tongue and, how would you describe the kind of construction? It's sort of like these slotted cardboard pieces that connect with each other, slot into each other to make this standing tree.
Yeah. It's like a giant cardboard standee.
The gap at the base is big enough to hold the deck of cards, which are just a regular deck of cards size. The branches in the center are big enough to hold four miniature cards. And then the branches at the top are big enough to hold, what, like 12 plus 20, like 20 meeples. And it does it all pretty sturdily. Like it sturdily. I mean, that's interesting.
It has a wide base. It's structurally sound.
It's very structurally sound. You know, you can bump it around a little bit. I certainly bump the branches every time I go to draw a card. And the meeples don't really ever fall off. The cards don't fall off either. Like, there's plenty of room, and it's pretty solid, and it looks good too. And
yeah,
it's a great table presence. The one thing that I have against it is just that it obscures the board if you're sitting behind it. So you do have to kind of sit around the board in a certain way to play this game, or you have to just be familiar enough to sit around it. But then also you do have to sit kind of near it, because the cards that sit on the branches for the events have pretty small text at the top to explain which cards you need to meet its prerequisites.
They're also small cards.
Yeah, the cards are also small
card size. They're not even Yu-Gi-Oh size.
Right, they're miniature card size, but I mean, they have to be, I guess, in order to fit on these branches. You know, if the tree could hold regular size cards, it would have to be much bigger, which would, I'm sure, lead to a couple other problems with this game. So it's sturdy, and it's big enough to hold everything that it needs to hold. And in the case of the meeples and the seasonal actions, I think it's very successful. Whether it's a fault of the tree or the cards, it's a little hard to see the basic events, and it could obscure other parts of the board depending on where you're sitting at the table.
Right.
But overall, it leads to it's a pretty impactful thing, and it's something that definitely helps to sell the game.
Yeah, this is a game where, like, it's perfect for playing at a convention, because people will walk by and be like, what's that game?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think the last few times we've been to a Geekway to the West, I've seen people play just, like, dexterity games with, like, metal rods and stuff. And it always makes me curious on what it is. And this is just another example of like, yeah, it sells itself.
Absolutely. It's also pretty good as a display in a store. Yeah. So like, and that's what, where I saw it, I think, and when I bought it was I went into a gaming store and there was a table set up in the front of the store with this game set up on it and a bunch of copies of the game around it. Yeah, and that's where I picked it up.
It's almost like a built-in product display.
Sure.
So from a mechanical perspective or a mechanical standpoint, this mainly focuses the attention of the players in, I think, a pretty smart way. So the tree is sort of, it's a tree. It's shorter at the top than in the middle and in the bottom. At the top, it shows the sort of game structure with the seasons, and it's where you put your meeples. And so with that being the part that's most visible most often, it reminds you of when you're going to get more resources, both with workers and green production symbols, which means that it's just players are more cognizant of the phases of the game. Yeah. They're more cognizant of, oh, I'm low on workers, you know, what will I get soon? Or, you know, when do I need to focus on building up my constructions or what have you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of like a timer almost for the game. You can look up and see how much longer you have left to play the game. In addition, it can also be a sort of like tempo reminder or a way to gauge other players' tempo, because you can look up there and say, oh, wow, Matthew's still in winter. Like he still hasn't moved on to summer and or spring, and I'm moving on to summer. So like how he's taking a ton of bonus actions.
Yeah. Then the bonus objectives are below that on the largest sort of shelf as far as width goes, which highlights the bonus objectives. They're very important. The bonus events or special events.
Special events, yeah.
It gives them importance. It is still kind of hard to see and read them because they're so small, but we already went over that.
At least, I guess, it's that like they're elevated. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe they're not as far away from the human eye as they could be. So
yeah,
I give them that. It is a little unfortunate that the upper layer of branches can obscure some of the cards. So if you're sitting like right next to the tree, you can see the two that are on your side of the tree, but the two on the other side of the tree, you may have to go and grab. Thankfully, the board's construction or the tree's construction is sturdy enough that you can pretty easily just pick the cards up off of the branches and examine them closer.
Yeah.
If you ever need to, it's not like touching the branches to get one of the cards off to read the thing is going to send everything crashing down. Everything will probably be fine if you try to do that.
Right. And then when your eyesight follows back down towards the board, you'll see the basic events, which are below the special events because they give you fewer points and are a little easier to come by.
Again, these can be obscured by the trunk, depending on where you're sitting, which is a little unfortunate. But at least in these cases, like the symbols that they've used and the pieces that they've used to designate the basic events are large enough. And they're also pretty similar. So you kind of know what the ones on the other side say.
Yeah.
And if you've played the game before, you just know for a fact exactly what they are. And you don't really need to be reminded of that. Yeah, it is helpful that they are positionally close to the tree trunk, and therefore they're close to the special events. The basic events are right next to the special events.
Right. There is, so this kind of reminds me of Mysterium, where the board design tells you where to sit. Like, I think the intention is that nobody should be sitting behind the tree. Mm-hmm. Everybody should be sitting on the front side of the tree where all the other stuff is, which is why like it's at the far end of the board. All of the information is on one side. The shelf doesn't really go back that far. The intention being like you sit in a half circle instead of a circle. And I think that is kind of rough because it's hard to dictate the table that the players are sitting at. Like if you're playing at a circular table, then you have to make some concessions with how long or how much distance is between players. Whereas, like, on a square or rectangular table, you can have two people per side pretty comfortably, which is what we did.
Hopefully. Yes. Although, that said, the game also needs you to have space in front of each player to have 15 cards laid out, you know, in some sort of array. Maybe it's three rows of five or two rows of seven and eight. But, three rows of five is what the game actually suggests you do to build your village.
Or you could do it. You need bowling. Room for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, I guess you could do a pyramid if you wanted to. So you need that space, that amount of that width for all those cards and stuff, plus your resources and your workers, in addition to the board being in front of you. So asking people to crowd around only half of the table, but then keep the room for that, it's a bit of an ask, but in the end, like, it is doable, and these are cards. There's no, like, placard to dictate your space and put cards into. So at least the space is flexible. You could do, you know, you can line up your cards vertically or however you need to in order to make it all fit in front of you.
Right. The board design in general is serviceable, I guess. Mm-hmm. There's room for their resources to go next to each of their spaces on the board. And generally, they're lined up in a way that makes sense with, like, the basic construction items on one side, the berries on the other side, and then pebbles kind of in the middle. That way there's a progression from left to right of building, special building, critter, because critters typically come after buildings.
Yes.
Especially with...
There's also a card in the game called the workshop or the storage house or something like that.
The storeroom.
Which, yeah. During the green... action. So when you acquire it, and then at the beginning of spring and fall, you choose to either put 3 sticks, 2 resin, 1 stone, or 2 berries on the card. So this card effect lists the resources in the order that they appear from left to right on the board, and also illustrates that and this continues throughout the cards, just like how often you acquire the resources and how often you're asked to spend the resources. Sticks are the most common resource, and they appear the most on resource requirements, followed by resin, followed by stone, and so that's sort of like a rarity tier list. So it makes sense that they're organized the way they are. Like you said, yeah. The most common ones are on the left, and then it goes to least common.
Right. There's a very conscious balance of the resource quantities versus their rarity and value, mm-hmm. which is pretty important when making an engine builder.
Mm-hmm. The forest locations, I think they just serve to frame the meadow. You know, maybe they could have been placed near the other locations, or maybe by separating them from the other locations, it makes them stand out a little more. But there's 2 on either side of the meadow, and the meadow is just a big open blank area in the center of the board for all the cards in the meadow to go. But there's plenty of room for those cards. Yeah. And then there's a little like lily pad sort of shape to this board. So there's this part that's cut out, this little like half circle cutout portion at the very base of the board. On either side of that portion, on the sort of these like wings wings, I guess I'll use the term, coming out of the bottom of the board is where the journey and the place where you discard cards to get resources, those actions are located. And then that hole is where the discard pile goes.
Right. It is funny that there is a physical progression there from deck at the very top to meadow in the middle, then the actions that let you discard to the discard pile.
Yeah.
Very clear cause and effect there.
It also makes sense to have the deck of cards nearby the resource spaces, because the cards themselves are sort of a resource in this game.
Yeah.
You know, you discard them or you spend them to get points or resources at the spaces at the bottom of the board. But it's important to get cards, just as it is important to get the resources to play those cards.
Right. By putting the meadow on the same board as the actions, it kind of reminds the player that that buying a card and playing it from the meadow is an action they can take. Mm-hmm. And additionally, it means that they're always in the center, or at least in like the view of the player. You know, if they're looking at like the basic actions, it'll at least be in their periphery. And so it always reminds the player of what's actually important in the game. I want to talk about this game's use of tempo, because I find it really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So balancing games around tempo is kind of difficult, but can lead to really interesting decision making. In this case, Everdell does it by making its like point gain require workers. I mentioned that during the strategy portion, but I think it's a really good decision from the design standpoint, because The way it works is that points do not develop your engine, but are necessary to win. So there's always the decision of going for points versus going for engine or resources. But because if you take points early, you're not building up your engine, other players have a chance to get points later, because you then have to catch up with your engine or your resources. Right. It's sort of like a like a NASCAR race with pit stops, where like you can go for these early plays, but eventually players kind of even out in tempo in some degrees. Like when sure. we played, I spent like I was by far the last person to enter spring. You know, I played 5 cards or so, or 6 cards in spring or in winter. But when the time came around to autumn, I was doing the least amount of things in autumn. Like, I had spent so many turns early on that I didn't really have resources to back myself up into the final season.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it both rewarded me for that early play, but then it also allowed other players to catch up or kind of do their own things. I think that's a really interesting way of balancing, that there mm-hmm. is a clear early game and late game sort of approach. You can either play for the early game or late game. And right. usually games will do this with, like, varying strategies that are more effective at certain points than others. You know, like a rush strategy versus a slow control strategy. This game kind of just does it by making the objectives negative tempo.
I wanted to talk about, well, I guess, let's see, there's a couple things I want to bring up. I enjoyed that the last time we played, I didn't actually build any structures with any green constructions or critters in the first season of the game that we played last. And I ended up coming in second place, only a few points behind you. So that was possible, that I didn't get any bonus resources from that or the next season, because it was summer and you don't get any resources then from your green cards, I think was kind of remarkable. And I'm guessing this happened because I spent my workers just getting a bunch of resources in the first season. So I guess I sort of incentivized getting priority resources over like just resources that I could transform into other resources to start to build the fundamentals of an engine. And then I moved on to the next season and I used all my workers then to start to build the engine. And I guess it was sort of like I was building an engine with 3 workers rather than 2. So maybe in that case, like my engine didn't have that foundation, but because I had 3 workers, I got to be a little more choosy about how it was built. So by the time it came around to like and came online, it was functional. So that the game was designed in such a way to allow that, where even if you don't do the obvious thing and build a bunch of green buildings and critters in the first season, you're not punished from that.
Right.
The game happened to have catch-up mechanics built into it.
Right.
I guess just by unlocking the workers sooner. I enjoy the sense of satisfaction, however, that you get from playing a lot of bonus stuff and like really maximizing your actions per season. I like that satisfaction, but I also enjoy that the game sort of punishes you or makes you really critically think about it, taking too many actions due to the size limit. Just having like the mechanics of the engine building plus the payoffs layered with the size of the village restriction makes for a lot of very interesting decisions throughout the game.
Right. So as much as I enjoyed this game, it was a very uncomfortable experience to play, I guess, because the text on the cards is so small.
Okay.
Like, so we briefly mentioned that the special events can be hard to read. They definitely were for me. I could not really read the font they had for the required cards from a far away. And by far away, I mean 1 seat away from them. And I was worried that if I had asked, like, what does this card say? Then it would be obvious what I was going for.
Sure. Yeah, that I wanted to mention that when we talked about how you could take the card off of the branches to read it. Yeah, that kind of puts a magnifying glass on which card you're actually paying attention to. Unless you just go and pick up all 4 cards.
Right.
Just to throw people off.
But then, like, I could barely even read the, like, free cards on my own cards that were right in front of me. So, like, it's kind of like Seven Wonders, where, like, the constructions will have at the bottom the name of the card it produces for free, and then the critters will have at the top left the construction that builds it. I definitely had trouble reading the construction requirement on the critter cards when they were in the meadow, and like, until the constructions were in my hand, I had a hard time reading what they actually produced for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing
again,
is that,
like, if you want to look at those, you have to pick them up and bring them close to your eyes, which again shines a spotlight on the ones that you're trying to go for.
Right. And then the other thing is that I had a card that copied an opponent's green effect, and I couldn't read some of my opponent's cards. And it didn't help that, you know, I was new to the game, so I didn't memorize everything. But also, this game's art uses a lot of greens and browns, but it doesn't have a whole lot to distinguish cards. I think the critters are pretty distinguishable, especially the ones that aren't mammals, like the Wanderer or the like owl that's in the clock tower, or it's a bat maybe. But
a bat, yeah.
Yeah. But like there's a lot of things like the bridge toad looked a lot like just the regular wooden bridge, which I guess is fitting, but also unfortunate. Yeah, I just could not tell cards apart easily. I'd have to keep rereading them.
The theming is delightful, but yeah, they really committed to a very limited color palette when it came to the cards artwork, and that makes the buildings, like the schoolhouse and the university and the post office, all have this very like yellowy golden saffron like wash over it, or like most of the picture is this very bright golden color, and right. Yeah, that makes it a little difficult to distinguish cards just by artwork, which is something that still only someone who's kind of experienced with the game can do,
I think.
With this game, when you have the experience, this is on one hand, this is sort of like Seven Wonders, where you become very acquainted with how cards build into other cards, and that can help you set up strategies without having seen all of the cards that you have available to you. You know, you can play certain cards knowing that other cards will be free later on, and that kind of experience can be very pleasurable to acquire about a game like this. It makes you better at the game when you understand which cards let you build other cards for free. But like you said, for a new player, it's very difficult to obtain this information, much less like catalog it and keep it, you know, memorized.
Yeah. The other thing with the art is that it reminds me of Magic art, where the art is supposed to like represent the color that it is. So like for all the cards in this game, pretty much the main color of the art, or the main palette, is based on what the resource it gives you is. Or not the resource, the suit. So yeah. Like the Wanderer, the postal pigeon, those both have like a yellowish tint to them. The construction site, the shopkeeper, that like clock tower bird, those all have a bluish hue. So they're all meant to kind of show you what suit they're part of, but I feel like they don't do a great job at distinguishing them based on other things like shot composition, lighting, shapes, action shots. A lot of them, yeah, it's hard to tell from a distance.
I want to talk about materials really quick, because I think this part of the game is pretty delightful, just like the theme, where they almost make each resource in the game basically made out of the resource that it's meant to represent. So, like, the sticks are made out of wooden pieces, and the resin is kind of like this, like, resin plastic cast thing, and the berries are made out of rubber, but it's a very distinct resource. Yeah, I don't see that kind of rubber in a lot of games, and it's kind of fun to play with that.
Yeah, they're very tactile pleasing.
And it was good tactile feeling. Yeah. But the only place that they falter on is I'm pretty sure that the stones are made out of plastic as well. That, you know, maybe they could have been made out of like a stone or like a marble kind of thing, but then, like, I'm sure the cost probably goes up. Maybe there's, like, a premium resource package you can get for this game that makes the stones also thematic.
I'm sure there's a small, nearly, like, Etsy shop.
Nearly incredibly thematic resource material choices. And I think, in the end, the resources are all very distinct, easy to manipulate, except the berries do kind of bounce around a little bit because they're rubber. Very good tactile feeling playing this game. Where the resources falter a little, or not the resources, the materials falter a little bit, is just that the tree, while it is made out of thick enough cardboard to be sturdy and easily hold everything, the cardboard is like a bunch of layers of paper sandwiched together, which is normal. But when you take it apart and put it together a number of times, the outer layer that the stuff is printed on starts to peel away, because the slot that you're slotting the edge of this cardboard into is just barely wide enough to fit that cardboard. It can get caught and peel a little bit, which is a little annoying. So I guess if you have this game, you might want to like tape up the very tips of the cardboard where you insert it into the other pieces of cardboard, just to prevent something like that from happening.
Yeah, kind of smooth it out a bit. I do like the meeples. Every player has meeples that are not only a different color but a different shape, representing a different animal. So like I had the blue ones, which were turtles. I think you had the white ones.
Yes, which are rabbits.
Yeah.
They could be mice. Their tails are like pointed and long, so they could be mice with really big ears. The brown ones are hedgehogs, and then I think the orange ones are foxes.
Makes sense.
Yeah, color selection is pretty good for those. The suit colors are all right, and the suit icons at least provide some differentiation for people who are colorblind.
I think, I think otherwise that's everything else I had to say. Oh, this game, I feel like it wears its inspirations on its sleeve, which is fine. Like the upgrading constructions to critters, the way it's both implemented and laid out does remind me a lot of Seven Wonders.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have as much like tree depth, I guess, since there's only two cards in any set.
You would say tree.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's just a two item tree.
Yeah, and then also the special events really remind me of like Flux, in that it's not just set collection, it's very specific card set collection.
Yes,
they tend to have some sort of like thematic idea behind them, but they don't really have like a clever name like a Flux card might.
Sometimes they do.
I think, well, I mean, they're not really named, the special events.
Are they not?
I thought Teacher they were. University is just called, oh wait, no, they do have names. You're right.
Yeah.
They're just, I keep forgetting about them.
Yeah, because it's not one of the things that you really care about. And it's also such a small card that the name gets lost amongst the requirements, space to put a meeple, and the effect of the space itself.
Right. While I don't actually know James A. Wilson's, like, actual design process for the game, I do think this is a good instance to just say, like, it's good to take inspiration from other things. I feel like part of game design is just playing other games, seeing what you like, iterating on it, seeing how it can be tweaked or implemented. And this is a good example of using those in a slightly different form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like it slots together very naturally. And it makes for an interesting version of a worker placement game, where it takes even less of the focus away from the worker placement and more on just like taking efficient actions.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then with that will conclude our discussion on Everdell. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
We will see you next time.
See ya.